folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima McGinn, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Native Shark, which is an online platform for learning Japanese. And what Native Shark do is they make learning Japanese really, really simple. You log in, you click a button that says study now, and the platform then shows you exactly what you need to learn next based on your previous progress. Now, again, this is simple, but the way it's designed means that students who use Native Shark once a day for 4 to 5 months can complete the equivalent of over 2 years of university study. And this is not just them patting themselves on the back. Now that Native Shark's been in business for over a year, the results are in. So this is exactly what people are saying. Just looking at a couple of posts in their community forums, and the student community, by the way, is one of the best things about the platform. So one person's writing, most productive year I've had learning Japanese. And then another one says, I've started learning over a year ago with all of these other platforms, and what I learned there is only a fraction of what I've learned on Native Shark in just 3 months. And then yet another one goes, in my mind, my study timeline only started with Native Shark because that's when I really started learning consistently, and on and on. So yet the proof's in the pudding. It's definitely the best online course out there. And since you've heard about it here on the podcast, you also get an extra little bonus. If you sign up for their free trial using the URL nativeshark.com/NTI, and we'll link to it in this episode's show notes. So that's native without an E. So N-A-T-I-V shark, all one word, .com/NTI. You use that link to sign up and you'll get a double length free trial. So 2 weeks free instead of just the one. No need to put in your credit card or anything of that sort. You can just sign up, give it a shot. And chances are at the end of these 2 weeks, you'll already be far ahead of wherever you are with your Japanese at the moment, whether you're just starting out or you're already in knee deep. Give it a shot. nativeshark.com/NTI. Okay, so as usual, quick pitch on our December business networking and board games, card games, strategy games event here in Fukuoka at the lovely Montan Hakata Hotel. Registration for the full room and board option. That's if you want to partake in Monica's, who's our amazing Chilean chef's food creations. So registration for those meal-inclusive ticket sales officially closes tomorrow, November 20th. So today and tomorrow are pretty much your last days to sign up or upgrade to those particular tickets. So again, hurry on down to our website or just use this screen if you're watching this on YouTube or via our show notes. If you're tuning in via our podcast on YouTube, you've got this QR code here from our newly printed event flyers. And we can't wait to see you all in 3 weeks' time here in gorgeous Fukuoka. Share business ideas, hear about your experiences, listen to Jason and Mario preach on business relationships and business in Japan generally, board game design and marketing, and of course, talk real estate investing, and equally important, play some really, really awesome games, whether entry-level, short little icebreakers, mid-range, puzzly types kind of games, or heavier, chunkier, thematic, or abstract games. We've got them all. Okay, so for today's episode, we've got Ben Sheeran with us again. You may recall he was on the podcast a couple of years ago, or you may just know him, especially if you're residing here in Japan. Ben's coaching sessions and published works and his website, Retire Japan, are the best, not to mention one of the only resources available in English on personal finances and planning for retirement in Japan. So he told us all about the Retire Japan project when he was first on the show. And today he returns to tell us what he's been up to, this time along with Haley Agra, who you've also seen and heard here on the show a few weeks ago. And most importantly, to tell us all about the first Retire Japan online conference, which is kicking off next week, November 23rd. Ben and I will be speaking at the conference, as will a couple of other excellent speakers, which Ben will introduce shortly. And of course, we also talk general personal finance, retirement, savings, investments. So not really directly related to real estate, although we definitely touch on that as well. Really good conversation. Trust you enjoyed as much as we did. And I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so Ben Sheeran, Retire Japan, back on the show. We haven't had you here for a good few years, man. How have you been doing?
Unbelievably. How's it going, Ziv?
Good, good. Well, I mean, well, the only thing that which is not good is that you told me that you're not going to be able to attend our December event, which is a huge shame, but we hope to see you in coming years.
Yeah, if you do it again,
Yeah.
and we're kind of in the travel mode again, that sounds good.
Yep, the plan is definitely to make it an annual event. We'll see how that pans out, but not sure yet. So yeah, man, what have you been up to? I mean, quick intro of yourself again to people who maybe are not going to be bothered to check out the first recording, which we highly recommend that they do. We'll link to that in the show notes, but maybe quick intro and then just fill us in on what's been happening the last few years.
Yeah, basically, so I've been living in Japan for 21 years now. And in 2008, I lost my job, which really made me focus on personal finance a bit more. It's quite traumatic. And since then, I've been learning and also trying to help people with personal finance through my website, Retire Japan. And that's been going well. So we've got a forum now. We're holding our first, hopefully annual going forward, online conference next week, with some amazing speakers. We've got a great lineup of speakers for that.
Yeah, one of them's a bit iffy, but the rest are okay. Yeah, that's actually a really good event. We've shared it and published it before. I will be speaking there, but so are three other phenomenal speakers, Ben included, and we will link to that again in the show notes as well. So, I mean, the fact that your website is doing so well, I think is not really because of the fact, well, for one, it's the only one out there that actually has this kind of information in a sort of neutral setting without actually trying to sell anything in particular. But also the depth of knowledge by yourself, of course, but also from all the people on the forum who are really generous with their time and advice. It's
Yeah, I
been.
think the community is definitely the best thing about it, for me as well. Like, I've learned so much just by running the site.
Yeah. So what have you been doing that's new? I mean, what have you introduced or anything particular that you can recommend to people? So just to make it clear, you're mainly catering to people who are living in Japan and looking to improve their financial position, basically with the long-term view of living comfortably when they retire, whether that's going to be earlier in their life or later, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's basically helping people, yeah, whether that's through coaching or just from providing information on the blog or by answering questions in the forum.
Yeah, and
That's our main.
you've mentioned the first time that we spoke, you mentioned that you really got into this space because you've noticed that there is no objective advice out there. Has that changed at all, in your opinion? Are there more
It
resources?
hasn't. I know of one other person who does paid financial coaching. But really, there's nothing out there in terms of English language sources of information for Japan, or rather neutral ones. There's a few companies that offer personal financial services in Tokyo, but I hesitate to recommend them, mainly based on their compensation model, in that they're commissioned to sell products. And of course, as you know, the products that pay the best commissions tend to have the highest fees as well.
Yeah. So it's kind of counterintuitive. The best products are actually not the ones that pay the most commissions, right?
Exactly.
But you've been, which kind of brings us to I guess one of today's main points. You have been talking about particular, I don't know if products is the right word, but particular schemes and strategies and resources that people can tap that are very specific to Japan, right? So could you fill us in a little bit about those?
Yeah, mainly I think we're talking about tax advantaged accounts. So these are special savings accounts or investment accounts created by the Japanese government to encourage investment and to encourage people to save for retirement. And in exchange, then you get exempt from paying tax on your investments. There's two main ones in Japan. There's iDeCo, which is a kind of pension. A personal self-directed pension product where you put money in every month. It's not taxed, but you can't access it until you retire. And the other one's NISA, which is a way of encouraging investment in general. So you can pay in up to a certain amount annually. You can have access to the money whenever you want, and the contents are tax-free. And those are the two main vehicles. Most people want to use.
So when you refer to them as investments, is that in the sense that they, I mean, aside from the tax savings, do they actually generate any kind of yield or return?
Yeah, so both of these are just sorry.
I no, you're good. This is you.
Yeah, so basically both of these, they're not investments per se, they're investment accounts. So you can put investments in them. You can buy investments within your Iveco account, within your NISA account, and that's what's going to generate the money. What the account does is it shields you from tax, capital gains tax and dividends tax.
So that is that kind of similar, like in Australia we call it SMSF, I think, is a self-managed super fund kind of thing, and
Yeah.
that can own properties or equities or any sort of thing that actually generates income and comes with a bunch of tax benefits, right?
Precisely, yeah. In
Okay.
Japan, most of them only have mutual funds available because they're low fee and broadly diversified. And
So
the government's basically
they
going.
can't own a property, for example. They're not an incorporated entity.
Precisely. You can buy REIT funds,
Okay.
real estate investment trust funds, but not specific buildings and so on.
Gotcha. And I guess that brings me to my next question. Where does Haley come into this? What have you been doing with Ben, Haley?
I first contacted him because I realized he was the first or only English source of Japanese retirement strategies and information that we could actually read. My boyfriend's half Japanese and he works here, so I'm invested in my retirement accounts back in America, but he's not invested in his. So I wanted to do a little bit of due diligence just to encourage him to invest in his retirement. Because I know how
Drag him
important it
kicking and screaming into saving money, right?
is. Yeah, basically. He still hasn't invested yet. He said this weekend is the weekend. And then I contacted Ben, and at the moment I was still working at my last full-time job, and I did marketing for events, and I helped people create slides and presentations. I offered Ben to help him create a course that he could sell to his prospective clients. So he doesn't have to do time on time like coaching, but he could sell the course and for more passive ways of
And
generating
scalable.
income.
Yeah.
Yeah. That fell out, but he also offered me a way to create some funds myself, and he gave me some affiliate links towards his products for the accounts that he offers, or the guides that he offers on the accounts in Japan. So with that information that he gave me, and also the discount that I got from subscribing to his email newsletter, I took it upon me to research the content and post on TikTok. And then it kind of skyrocketed because no one talks about investing in English in Japan.
Yep.
So I found a niche, and now I just
Cool.
tunnel Ben's information into a younger demographic.
And are you finding that they're open to it? Are they actually listening?
Yeah, they're
Yeah.
pretty open to it. It's really hard to keep their attention on the long-term investing part.
Right.
Most people just want like a quick, like easy, fast, get more money kind of scheme.
Oh, that doesn't improve with age, by the
Yeah.
way.
And like I remember being there, but I'm doing everything I can to convince people to like switch their mindset. So it's kind of like a coaching thing as well. But I have convinced over 20 people to invest in their NISA for the long term, which is really cool. I just need that one boyfriend to start investing.
So what I'm going to ask you about these products in a second, Ben, but maybe I want to sort of segue into that for a second. Why do you think it is so difficult for people to actually take that first step and get into the routine of actually not even investing, just saving for retirement? Like, because a lot of people are like Haley's birth and like, yeah, but not this month, or oh, this year there's all this happening, so I'll think about it. But why is it so difficult to take that first step?
It's in the future. People yeah. don't see their future as like right there.
It's very complex, I think. It's your psychology, it's your background, it's your sense of values, it's your experience, all mixed together. So I tend to find that most people kind of reach a trigger point at some point. They kind of wake up and they're like, oh, it's time, right? Yeah. You know, I've had a child, you know, I'm 40. Something happened. I lost my job. That was my trigger point. I've never been great with money. But
we were talking about at it that point. We were talking about it before you logged in. My trigger point was just suddenly realizing yeah. that I've accumulated $50,000 in debt, right?
Off of credit cards. Ah.
So it's a pain point, right? That
yeah, and it's kind of pointless to try and talk to people before they hit the trigger point.
Right.
Because they're not ready to listen to you. It's not real to them yet.
Education might have a lot to do with it too, right? Like I know that, for example, and this was something that was never done for me as a child, right? Like I basically asked for money when I needed it and I got it. And, you know, I might have spent it on stupid things. I might have spent it on wiser things, but there was never any budgeting or saving factor involved in my rearing. And I see now with my son, like, we put him on an allowance. He's now 12. He's been on it for like 5 or 6 years already. And obviously at first he spent it on stupid things, right? Like you got money in your pocket and you go and you buy silly things. But as his reserves constantly ran out and he recognized that now he wants to buy this like slightly bigger thing, but there's no money to get it. And we staunchly refuse to like give him credit, right? Like deducted from my next allowance is not gonna happen. and he's learning. He's actually learning. Like he's actually
saving. Awesome.
And sometimes it's in a, you know, kind of manipulative way, like, oh, Dad, can you buy that? Because I don't want to use my money for that. But there is a lot of learning involved. I think education is a huge factor, isn't it?
The home environment, definitely. Also in schools, I've been teaching personal finance to university students for the last 4 or 5 years, and they're very receptive to that. And from next year, Japanese high school students are going to learn personal finance at school.
Wow.
Which is pretty exciting. I'm a bit worried about the quality of teachers, but I think it's a great big step towards having a more financially literate population.
Definitely better than nothing, right? Even if the teachers are not spec.
Absolutely. Although, yeah, you got to be careful. Like a lot of the stuff in the UK, it's stuff like, hey, let's pick stocks. And whoever's stock went up the most in the next 8 weeks is the winner, which is not the right approach to learning about investing.
Long-term thinking there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so products. What are the products that you... So you're obviously not representing, I'm assuming, a particular company or organization, or at least not a commercial organization, but what are you offering? You are?
I mean, basically, Retire Japan is very much a passion project for me. It's not very profitable. I actually had an interview with Goldman Sachs. They wanted me to do some training for their employees. And we founded a bit because they started saying, well, how do you make money with this website? And I was like, I don't want to. And they were like, we don't understand. So we have basically two guides, English language PDFs, basically, PDF publications, one for Iveco and one for NISA. And the main reason I wrote those is because there is basically no information in English about these things. There's some very good books in Japanese. So if you can read Japanese, I would recommend getting those instead. They're probably more in depth. But if you only speak English, these might be a good way to get the basic information.
So if you're talking about Iveco and NISA being basically containers for investments, I'm guessing your guidebooks are basically guidebooks about how to invest profitably, right?
The basic principles, yeah. I mean, the thing about investing is that it is really easy. You know, there's lots of people whose job is to make it seem difficult so that you'll pay them to help you with it. Mm-hmm. But investing is very, very easy at the end of the day. You just need to buy very cheap products and products that are very diversified. So rather than buying one company, which might do well or might do badly, you buy the entire world stock market. And your investment thesis is over time, the world economy will grow because people will, you know, make new products and solve problems. And I think that's probably quite a reasonable investment assumption going forwards. So if you pay very low fees on that, then over time, you're going to do very well.
So when you say cheap, that's cheap for the sake of diversity again, so that people can hedge up with different types of investments as opposed to a single expensive stock or equity?
No, cheap as in the fees are cheap.
Oh, the fees so are cheap.
When you buy an index fund, which is what these things are, there's an annual management fee that's levied on the balance. And the higher that fee is, the less money you get, basically.
Right.
And the best ones now in Japan are down to 0.1% a year in fees.
That's amazing.
So that's a very low fee that you're paying to get access to these great investments.
And that's on the value of the assets held or on profits, or what's the percentage of?
That's on the entire assets held. Yeah.
Okay. So even if you're losing money, you still need to pay based on whatever they're worth, right?
Yeah.
Any exciting success stories for people on the forum or people that you've coached personally, or can we give people a taste of what happens when you do that?
I think life just gets a little bit easier. So I always say, you know, if you're good with personal finance, you're just notching down difficulty level on life a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, if you're good with money, you have far fewer problems, and the problems you do have are much more manageable. So I think a lot of people now are kind of, you know, they don't feel they have control over life. They're doing their job and they've got these bills and it's all a bit stressful, but it doesn't have to be. You know, just by making some small changes over time, you can get to the point where money isn't stressful. And in fact, to the point where you don't have to think about money. You know, I started 15 years ago, so 2008, 13 years. And now we're very close to not really needing to work for money anymore, my wife and I. And before that, we were terrible with money. So it can happen very quickly if you make some basic changes to how you relate to money. And that's something that we talk about a lot on the forum. So if you want to learn about personal finance, about investing, and investing is not the biggest part, actually. It's more about how you spend money and how you think about money. That's what makes the real difference.
So Haley, as a member of the younger generation, tell us about your experience. Like, you're obviously invested for your retirement in the States, you've mentioned, but how did you, because you obviously got to that before you met Ben, we can't credit him with all of that. So how did you get started? Like, what was there, like Ben was saying, like a pain point or a trigger point for you, or how did it all happen?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a pain point. So I wasn't in $50,000 of credit card debt, but I was in about maybe $2,000 in credit card consumer debt. And my parents paid for my rent in college. I also withdrew from college, I think my second year. And I acquired debt because I used to get scholarships and I had to pay back my scholarships because I left. So at that point, I was like, okay, I'm moving back in with my parents and I'm in debt, but we're going to Japan, so that's cool. And so I moved away from all my friends and I kind of excluded myself from any outside anything, and I was like, I'm gonna get good with money because I have all this time, I'm taking a break from college. So I started diving into podcasts, books, YouTube videos of how to get better at money management. And then after I got the basics down of how to budget and what to invest in and how to invest for your retirement, I started researching how to make it faster, and that brought me to real estate and eventually you, and then after I talked about or got a Japanese boyfriend. Yeah.
So when you say make it faster, so what real estate specifically is conceived? I'm not really that cluey on personal finance
right.
terms or approaches. So is real estate considered something that makes you grow your value faster, or how does that work?
Yes. So retirement accounts, they're not supposed to be super risky. I've seen some strategies based on how old you are of how risky you can be. And Ben was talking a little bit about index funds. That's when you buy the average of the stock market. So it's easily diversified. You have different eggs in different baskets. And honestly, that's the best type of investment, because people who day trade, 95% of the time, us people that invest in just the average of the stock market beat them. So I don't see the point of like watching screens and watching stock ticks and trying to time the market when you could just buy the average.
Some people
are. Yeah, and just ride the wave of the average, and then you'll be better than 95% of everyone. But I think on average, we like to, in the financial independence community, we like to have an average. We like to say it's like 6 to 10% returns when you invest in the average of the stock market. Even though it can be a lot higher, it can be a lot lower than that. But that's conservatively the average of what you'll get in return for however many years you invest, usually over like 20, 35, from age 20 to 65.
Yep.
And whereas real estate, you know that your returns can be a lot higher than 10%. And you have full control over that because it's your money, and you evaluate properties based on how many people you can get rented, or well, you do property management.
Well, to a point, I mean, you can get higher. I mean, I would say the average for your typical long-term passive investor, which is most of our clients, is actually quite similar, maybe even a little bit lower to what you're describing. So I would
say
6 to maybe 7 and 7.5% at best. But you can get a lot more creative with real estate as long as you have the time and the bandwidth and the resources to make it happen. So there are hacks, I guess. But that's probably kind of similar to a very good day trader, right? Somebody who really knows what they're doing can actually.
Yeah. And the thing with real estate is, though, but you have ownership of a property. And also, if you buy a house and you rent out a few rooms and you're basically living mortgage-free, you're knocking out one of your most expensive expenses you ever have to pay, which brings you a lot more revenue or a lot more profit from any other source of income that you create. Yeah. Whereas stocks, it takes a lot to build up and compound in interest over time. That's
the attractivity. Ben, does real estate, I mean, obviously REITs you've mentioned, but does real estate, actual real estate holdings play a part in any of the portfolios of the people that you coach or that you're in contact with on through the forum?
Yeah, of course. Some of our members are into real estate. I think that's also a personality thing. You know, like my godfather lives in Germany, and he has an immense real estate portfolio, and he gave up on the stock market. So he couldn't handle the stock market emotionally. But he loves, you know, managing his properties and redecorating his properties and doing all that. Whereas for me, I'm extremely lazy, so I want nothing to do with property management. Instead, I'm happy to buy stocks because it's completely passive. Once you've made the decision to purchase, there's nothing else you need to do.
The downside there is that real estate is not as liquid as stocks, so it's not as easy to panic sell.
Anyway. Ah, that's very true. Yeah.
You have time to think your decision 2, 3, 4, 5 times before you can actually go ahead with it.
Exactly. I think also, depending on the market, obviously leverage is huge, because you know, you can use leverage to boost your returns with real estate. You know, by borrowing money from the bank, that can multiply your gains, but also your losses if you're unlucky with the timing.
Yeah, it definitely brings up the risk factor there. We are, Chikako and I are extremely debt averse. Like, we hate the idea of anybody else having any say on the assets that we hold. But I know that, yes, that we are definitely a minority. Leverage is a huge part of real estate investments for most people. So there's definitely that. Okay, well, what are we going to, just before we wrap up, what are we going to be hearing on next week's webinar? I know what I'm talking about, but give me some time.
Well, actually, there's a lot of real estate, mainly because we don't feature it that much on the site. I'm not personally involved in real estate, so there's perhaps less real estate. And that's why I wanted to have you talk. And also Daniel, who is a US-based. He lives in Japan, but he invests in the US real estate market, which is different enough that I thought it'd be really interesting to have both of you talk and give the contrasts. Got Adam, who's going to be talking about RetireWikiJP, which is a site that he started that kind of grew out of the Retire Japan Forum. And it's a wiki, so it's a bit like Wikipedia, but for financial topics in Japan. So it's a good place to find specific kind of step-by-step instructions for things and specific information. It's a great site. He's going to be talking about what it is, what's on it, and how people can actually contribute and add their own information to the site and so on. And then finally, I'll be talking about the basics of personal finance in Japan, and then we'll have a big Q&A session at the end. And for me, that's always the most interesting part of these conferences, giving people the chance to ask questions and really deal with their specific issues. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, Q&A is always the best. And I find that it's always better to allocate more time to Q&A than you ever would have thought when you start.
Yeah, we've got an hour, but it might go longer, and I'm probably okay with that. So we'll see how it goes.
That's awesome. So just to remind everyone, it's free to attend, but registration is mandatory. So you do have to register in advance to get the link. And registration closes, I think, this coming Monday, which is the
20th. Yeah, Monday afternoon is going to be the last chance to sign up. We're going to be sending out the link on Monday evening, and that's it.
Okay, so Monday 22nd November is your last day to register for the 23rd. Retire Japan online conference, is it?
The inaugural Retire Japan.
I'm so sorry. Inaugural Retire Japan.
Pretty cool.
Yes. Awesome. So yeah, I'll be there. Haley will definitely be there too, right? In the audience, at least.
I will. I need to register, so I need that link.
Okay. Oh, yeah. You better hurry up. Excellent.
Great stuff. All right. Any parting words? Any parting questions? Haley, anything?
Yes. One last question to wrap it up. What has been your biggest regret on purchasing anything?
That's an interesting question. I tend not to regret things. If something happens and I wasn't happy with how it turned out, I kind of try and figure out what the lesson was, what not to do next time, and I just move on. So I don't really dwell on things.
That's
a good way to live life, I think. But to answer the question, maybe buying a hedge fund. So I bought into a hedge fund in like 2009 or so, just after the financial crisis. One of these trend following things with high fees and, excellent reported results, and it really didn't do much for me. It was the wrong thing to buy. I thought I was being clever, and that's when you lose money, right? When you think you're being clever. So stick to the basics, I think, and that's how to. Of course, it didn't matter. I could have made more money doing something more sensible, but it's fine. So we kind of moved
on. Right? So really, you couldn't deploy your capital elsewhere while it was in there, but you haven't actually lost on it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been much better just having it in the stock market. I'd have made like three times as much. But, we learn these lessons and move on, and it didn't hurt us particularly, so it's fine.
I think in my case, it was not really investment related, but I had a family relative, a grand uncle, who passed away in Australia while I was in Japan, and he left us a bit of an inheritance. And I was in Japan at the time, couldn't work because I was on a tourist visa, short on cash. My son was just born. And I got into my head for various reasons that the lawyer handling his estate was either just not caring or was trying to dip into the funds under her management and so forth. So I ended up hiring another lawyer to wrestle the estate out of her hands. And we ended up succeeding in doing that, but at the cost of about the third of the inheritance that just went to the second lawyer. So by the way, karma wise, it never pays to do these kinds of things. I found out later that he must have done that to somebody else who was a bit more violent than me, because somebody broke into his office and beat the living daylights out of him. But fortunately, he's still alive. I don't wish that on anyone. But yeah, karma will come back to bite you on the bum. But I guess my takeaway from that, like Ben was saying, best not to have regrets. And even if you did something silly, as long as you learn from it and you don't repeat the same mistake again. And I guess for me, it was like a really good lesson in if you do anything financial or otherwise, but especially financial, if you do anything related to your finances from a place of panic or from a place of need, like we always tell our customers, for example, whatever you end up investing here in Japan, don't invest with funds that you're going to be needing back home in a hurry to pay your bills, or to pay a mortgage on your existing home loan, or to do the shopping. Like, only invest with money that you know you can park somewhere and you've got other sources of income. Because once you start thinking about it from a place of, oh, but I need that money and I need it now, that's when you make these costly mistakes, I think.
Yeah. And that's something to watch out for as well. If someone's trying to make you hurry up and instill a sense of urgency in you, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Right. You know, if someone's trying to sell you something and they're like, yeah, you've got to commit to this today to get the right, you know, that's rarely in your best interest, I think.
But having said that, there are, you know, more opportune times to hit a particular market or a particular investment than others, right? Like some people contacted us during COVID and we did tell them, well, yeah, at the moment, Tokyo, Nagoya, Osaka prices are softer because of COVID. That's not to say that we want your money and we want it now, but yes, now is a good time to invest in that particular asset, right?
I think that's different than setting kind of arbitrary deadlines and pushing people absolutely to make a decision on the call, right? You got to give me yes or no, Ziv, right now.
24 hours and the offer goes away.
yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very common.
It is really common in scams to have a sense of urgency. I know a few people who reached out to me in trying to invest in their retirement accounts, they kind of willingly put their money into the hands of someone else because they had urgency and because they mentioned everything that they wanted to hear, but it wasn't backed up with any actual sound investments. It was like a hedge fund, but from an individual on Instagram or something. Ooh. So you gotta be really careful. Really careful with where you put your money.
And how about you? What are you, have you had any financial regrets?
Yes, tons. In for this example, I'm gonna talk about college. I was at Colorado State University maybe 3 years ago, and I didn't have a lot of money management skills. All I knew was spend below your means, but I was still living as if I was with my parents. I was going out to eat and my parents were paying my rent and I still wanted to have fun and go to concerts. So my money management was everywhere. I spent more than I made, even though I was working, and I spent more than I made for my job and my scholarships on consumer things instead of things that could better my financial state and better my education just in college in general. So my regret was not investing my early time into understanding the proper way to use money as a tool to increase your health, future wealth, and health, wealth, and relationships.
So in your case, you're regretting a period of your life kind of thing. Well, yeah, not the entire period, but your financial attitude. Yeah.
Yeah. My financial mindset.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good takeaways. Well, thanks again for everyone. And we will see you on Tuesday.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Dave. Good talking to you.
Yep, so the first inaugural Retire Japan online conference this coming Tuesday, 10 a.m. Japan time. Registration, which is free, closes on Monday. So make sure you register by then to get your link to join the event. Hope to see you all there. And also again, hope to see as many of you as possible with us in a few weeks time here in Fukuoka at the Montan Hakata Hotel for our first business networking, board games, card games, and strategy games event. If you want to be pampered with some seriously awesome food, again, make sure to register for your full room and board tickets today or tomorrow, November 20th. Following this date, we're probably only going to have room-only or daily attendance-only tickets available. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.